Cape Town, a tiny little visdorp of 4.8 million people and growing. We've seen an influx of people to Cape Town and the region for various reasons. Seeking better opportunities, seeking education, seeking jobs. That's all parts of the natural migration and movement of people. But then we've also, over the last few years, during lockdown particularly, saw this phenomenon of what's called semigration, from people up north who want to spend a bit of their time here in South Africa and maybe keep their residence in other parts of the country. An expectation that the Cape Town population will grow between 2020 and 25. We'll see an expectation of something like 400,000 more people in the city. We've already seen just this winter, just this summer, over the impact of load shedding, but also the impact of an increased population on the impact of infrastructure, sewerage infrastructure. We have the northern parts of the city where there are developments going up on a monthly basis, new housing developments. And you see parts of the Parklands, Sunningdale area heaving under that pressure. Zane Johnson of our traffic says it's anecdotal, but he says people in traffic and Cape Town traffic says, yes, they've seen traffic return to pre-COVID levels, plus probably about 30% more. We are seeing more people in the city. But we ask, we know the benefits of having the human capital, the experience of people in the city can benefit us. But at the moment, are we growing a little bit too fast for our own good? Joining me now, Deputy Mayor Eddie Andrews, who's also the MACO member for Spatial Planning and Environment, and Nick Budlander, who is an urban policy researcher at Ndifuna Ukwazi. Eddie, I'll start with you. Is or has the city prepared for over the last few years to see this explosion of people, whether through natural migration movements or whether through this phenomenon that we call semigration? Has the city anticipated and prepared for an increased population in the city of Cape Town? Good morning.
Lester, good morning to you and good morning to Nick. So the answer is yes. I think if you look at just recently the announcement that we've made, with a genuine appreciation of the impact of rapid urbanization, the fact that we're trying to position Cape Town as a city of hope and inspiring, hopefully inspiring other municipalities across the country to do the same, it is a problem, because the consequence of that problem would be people come to Cape Town because they see, at least in Cape Town, there's political stability, there's policy certainty, and there's a competent administration to operationalize that vision. And as a consequence, people come. And so in the past, we probably agree that we've not really taken into consideration the impact of population growth and significantly increasing our budgets to respond to that. And of course, that has now been changed. We've seen over the last 2 years what has happened globally. And of course, South Africa has not been immune to those pressures. And I think the recent announcement confirms that there's a plan, and it's not just a plan, but we've also committed budgets in the next 10-year horizon to respond to the impact of rapid urbanization. Mm-hmm. And this would include, infrastructure capacity upgrades, additional allocation towards human settlements, but also seeking to partnership with private sector who could, assist us building additional homes at affordable tariffs and just sort of guiding us in terms of how we should sustainably respond to those pressures. So the answer is yes. And as a consequence, more people are coming. And end of this decade, I suppose we suspect that we will probably surpass, if not come close to, 6 million people residing in Cape Town.
But this is a recent announcement of an infrastructure department. I spoke to the mayor shortly after he was elected, before he was sworn in, but after election results, and he admitted that, yes, this city has not necessarily anticipated the growth. Your political party that you represent in council and your deputy mayor of the city has been in power since 2006. As was there no plan, no anticipation that we would see the effects of natural migration, how the city markets it and attracts residential and development was there planning in 2006, 2008, for the years following that, to anticipate that this city will grow? Why are we only doing this now in 2023? That, oh yes, we need a director that particularly looks at infrastructure development.
Yeah, I think that's why I mentioned in the past that has not been taken into consideration. The plan has always been there. And I think one thing that could possibly argue that was lacking was political discipline. I think as government, you're always looking at a variety of matters you need to respond to sustainably. And there are other pressures. I mean, even if you look at recently, there was a repurposing of the budget for COVID. Just before that, we've come out of day zero, how we had to repurpose budgets. And there are always other pledges that we had to look at. Of course, that's no longer, we don't have the luxury of time now, Lester. And I think hence we've said, well, we're going to commit to this in the next 10 years, significant capital investment, where we're literally in the next 2 years doubling our CAPEX, our capital budget, to respond to those pressures. And sometimes the delays in terms of upgrades is not entirely the root cause, not entirely the cause of slowness on government's part, but there are other issues such as litigation where we have to wait until court action concludes before we can proceed, where there's an aggrieved applicant that they have not received the contract and we have to wait for those processes to conclude. But I completely agree that we've not really in the past been disciplined enough to sustain our investment in infrastructure. And the fact that Cape Town has been a sought-after destination for the reasons you've alluded to, it really has compounded the problem. But that's been remedied now with a significant financial commitment over the 10-year horizon.
Nick Bundland of Undifuna Kwazi. Nick, the focus has often been on lower income earners and the natural migration of people seeking opportunities coming to the city of Cape Town. The focus has largely been on that. Sapping, and I say this with air quotes, was often the sentiment, sapping the resources of the city. But what do you think is the impact on large-scale residential development that we're seeing in the city, particularly in the northern parts, the northern corridor of Parklands, North Sunningdale? We're seeing massive residential development. What's the impact there you seeing on our infrastructure concerns?
Thanks, sir. Good morning, Lester, and good morning, Eddie. I mean, firstly, I just want to say that I think it's great that the city now acknowledges that it hasn't taken the adequate sort of planning and adequate action to prepare for the inevitable urbanization of Cape Town. As you pointed out, Lester, urbanization is a natural process and is a feature of pretty much all modern urban economies around the world. You know, the city's own officials, academics, and a broad range of sort of civil society groups have been warning the city for a long time that it needs to take a more proactive and urgent approach when it comes to preparing for urbanization. And I think two key places where that is really shown is with infrastructure and with housing provision. So in terms of infrastructure and the question about parklands and the northern suburbs, you know, I think it's an important one. And I think that all of the development that is happening there is placing strain on the bulk infrastructure. But at the same time, you know, we have this absolutely massive shortage of housing that is affordable to households that earn less than 20,000 rand a month. And that's 75% of all households in Cape Town. So what is abundantly clear is that we need to massively scale up the delivery of housing that targets that group. I think that, you know, one of the areas where the city could really be doing a lot better, and again, which they've been warned about repeatedly over the years, is in the use of public land. You know, the public land is currently used very, very inefficiently. So we have golf courses that are leased out for 1,000 rand a year, you know, that could accommodate entire suburbs of development. We have, you know, parking lots and bowling greens and other parcels of public land spread throughout the city that really could be leveraged to help address this crisis and could also be leveraged to help balance where development takes place so that certain areas don't take too much infrastructural strain. I mean, of course, I think it's really important to point out that other spheres of government own a huge amount of land here too. National government has been very slow to move on the land that it owns. And given how much, given how rapid urbanization is and how we can expect it to grow and continue, I think this has to be a major issue for the city to act more urgently on. You know, they, obviously budgets are constrained and there are questions about there isn't an endless supply of money. But if the city leveraged the assets that it owned, it really could make a huge dent in that infrastructural crisis and in the housing crisis. And then the last thing I want to say on this is that we need to be a little bit careful when talking about infrastructure overloads and infrastructure backlogs, that the views of areas that are relatively better off aren't given sort of priority over areas where actually there are the bigger infrastructural issues. Mm. So we often hear residents of areas like Claremont and Seapoint and Woodstock complain about new residential developments, saying that the areas are overburdened and that they're too dense and that the infrastructure is struggling. But actually, it is in the poorer areas where there has historically been this terrible underinvestment, you know, the Khayelitshas, the Dunoons, the Delfts. And it is in those areas that you most viscerally and clearly see the effects of this underinvestment, you know, quite literally with sewage flowing through the streets. So I think, you know, while I am cognizant of the need and of the urgency and seriousness of the problem of infrastructure capacity in some of the more formally developed areas, I think it's really in the townships and in informal settlements where the city has historically underinvested the most.
Nick, your thoughts on the movement of middle income people? We call that semigration, but poorer people, we call that job migration. And the impact of the middle income bracket and its movement to Cape Town and the impact on the access to rental housing, particularly in areas like the Cape Town CBD and the adjacent areas, and its impact it would have on even young Cape Town professionals who maybe earn a middle income salary being priced outside that market because we have the centralization of people who move to Cape Town wanting to live in certain areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a complicated issue because, like I said, I think urbanization is inevitable. I think people moving to cities that they see as desirable will always happen. And, you know, on one hand, again, it's important to acknowledge that people are moving to Cape Town because in many ways, they are escaping the dysfunction and mismanagement of some of our other metros. And these are problems that you do see less here. Services in general, not, they aren't necessarily provided evenly, but in general, they are provided quite well. But basically, I think that the movement of sort of higher income people into Cape Town is a boost for the city of Cape Town itself, right? It increases the rates and the revenue and all the money that they earn. But there needs to be a sort of commensurate response, and they need to use the additional money that they earn now and that they will earn in the future to kind of plan and protect the people that make the city run. So, I mean, Lester, you were saying that even some sort of middle income young people can't afford to live in the city. You know, what does that mean about the people that really make the city run? I'm talking about nurses, teachers, cleaners, security guards, construction workers, you know, the people that actually make our city function. They really have no chance to live in well-located areas right now. And so I think, yes, I think, you know, there's no sort of moral issue with wealthier people moving to Cape Town. That's fine. That's a boost to the city's economy. It's a boost to the city of Cape Town's revenue. But the city needs to adequately plan and protect the other residents. Because like I said, and I think this really is a truly shocking statistic, which comes from the city itself, there's a shortage of housing for people that earn less than 22,000 rand a month. And that accounts for 75% of all households in Cape Town. You know, I mean, it seriously requires urgent action to address.
Nick, I'm going to go to the Deputy Mayor now. When we talk about infrastructure, bulk infrastructure, we talk about access to services. We talk of access to housing. The array of conversations we can have just on this question, is the city of Cape Town growing too quickly? But I want you to concentrate, Eddie, in the little time we have on the recently launched spatial development plan, which does have the potential to absolutely reconfigure and relook at the city that we currently live in. It talks about rezoning certain parts. It talks about the densification on what used to be, you know, freestanding homes in many parts of the city. We have to imagine a city that is growing, that is going to talk and speak to densification, the world that we used to live in, that my parents, my grandparents used to enjoy with a driveway and a small little garden, is probably gone. We're looking at a city that has to follow an international scenario of where we're going to see densified cities. That is, I see, as the future of the city of Cape Town, Eddie.
Lester, absolutely. It's a view that we fully subscribe to. Even the stat that Nick just read out now, that same stakeholder grouping, they spend just over 40% of their disposable income on transport. And so the reality is we need to ensure that there are economic opportunities closer to the residential opportunities, and if not, bring residential opportunities closer to the economic opportunities. And we've seen how recently we've disposed land for social housing close to the economic nodes as well. We are engaging closely with the private sector. How do we dispose of the land that we have in sought after areas, and so they can put out affordable units? Now, affordable units as defined in the framework now is exactly what we are pursuing. Precisely those police officers, those teachers, those nurses who are attending to you when you're in a hospital, they need to be well rested. They don't need to take about three or four modes of transport to get to work. So we fully subscribe to that view. And the MSDF, that's exactly what the attempt is, to have those opportunities closer. And also, PT1 and PT2 nodes as well, where we've actually just recently approved, where we supporting exactly what you're saying, offer, opportunities for reduced parking areas to developers close to public transports, close to residential opportunities. It's a view that we fully support in Cape Town.
Eddie, very quickly, running out of time, but over the next few years, we're going to be seeing more bulk infrastructure. We're going to be seeing more pipes being laid. We're going to be seeing more roads being built. And we're going to be seeing more high rises being built, even in areas where we don't traditionally find the way people have enjoyed the freestanding homes. That is what the city is going to have to look like, a central construction site over the next few years to accommodate almost 500,000 more people by 2025.
Yes, the answer is yes, not just the people, but schools and other industries as well, to ensure that we're able to accommodate everyone with their growth opportunities.
Nick Bunlader, Eddie Andrews, thanks so much for your time. Fortunately, that's all we have time for here on Good Morning Cape Town.